Hi, I'm Al Criazzo from Catskill Mountain Housing. You're listening to WGXC, Agra, Catskill, and Hudson.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. And add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the McPees of East Hampton, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org Enterprise. Here, every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why talk about race, some ask, continuously, and my answer is always to simply combat racism. Education is key for this to happen, and discussion, which is what we are doing, is a must. It is my hope that you, too, will come to know there's only one race, the human one. In fact, that's a title of a children's book I wrote. A few years ago. There's only one race, the human one, says me, a children's book ending racism. And as you may well know, I am in the process of writing another one. And this time it's for the general public so that we are all on the same page. And it's very wonderful that I have today several guests, actually, in my presence, but one online and one right in the studio. And we will look at the term racist, specifically anti-racist, and being a or not being a racist, and what those differences are, because it came up in our last month's September show with my guest, and I asked the question to you, and I did get some responses, and I thought that it would be really great for us to revisit that with the person whose work I actually stole off the internet. We do that, but you know, when we take things from people off the internet, it's because we really view their work as expert, and that is exactly why I did that. And then while I was doing that, I asked her to be on my show. But before I tell you who she is, but of course some of you might have already gone online and recognized who that would be, let's talk about the last month of, or the last few days of Latino Hispanic National Heritage Month. So as I said last month, that the Heritage Month, it goes from September 15th to October 15th. And now that we are on October 17th, we could definitely say goodbye to that. However, I thought to, since, you know, we want to still look to celebrate Latino white culture, why not? Specifically this month, we are going to experience a holiday here in the States, Halloween. All Hallows Eve is where it really comes from and what how we celebrate it. But our neighbors to the south, Mexicans, they have a similar holiday called Dia de los Muertos, or the Day of the Dead. And we will have a somewhat ghoulish sounding presentation at the end of our show. We like to go out with audio so that we don't just disconnect without having some kind of cultural or fun music and of the like. So what wonderful show you have to look forward to is going to start off with our very, I would say this talk topic is not usually a talk topic. It's usually a talk term. And that is basically our talk topic today is terminology. And the terminology that we will engage upon, as I mentioned, comes from looking at what we talked about last month with anti-racism, and it will move into why are we talking about race in general. With race, a social construct, we are often mixed up or not really clear on how to engage with people. What do you call them? What terminology at what time of the decade is the right word to use to discuss and describe people? And so we will have that conversation today too. And the very last thing that we may discuss, if we have time, we might discuss more, but we will save somewhat for the last. Like I said, we have a second guest on, and he has been on the show quite a bit. In fact, he was going to bring a speaker on today, this month, but in their country, they're not able to engage with us because of their constantly being losing power, and this is in some countries in Africa. I actually lived in South in St. Kitts and Nevis, that's in the Caribbean. And even in this country where it's very well visited and by tourists, they had blackouts and rolling lights out. So we are very, very lucky to be in a country where it's very rare that our power goes out. Although where I live in the country right now, mostly when it's really a bad rainstorm, we're looking at least a few minutes of not getting our internet. So if we have internet TV, we're not able to use it. So it's not like we can't experience it anywhere. But on a regular basis, it can be very detrimental to making plans to do something like this. So I did want to bring on Garrett Roche, however, and have him speak about his podcast and what he's going to be up to doing with either this guest or others in the future. So he will be on, and he's also helping me with production. So if anything goes awry, I'm going to say it's his fault. No. Now let's get into our show, shall we? I thought to talk about social construct and everything prior to bringing on my guest, but I believe since before she actually came on, I actually started the show, we had a short conversation, and she shared with me some very interesting cultural tidbits about herself that I don't really want to have ignored. So I'm going to bring her on immediately. This is one of the best shows we're having because we really are going to dive into what is current in America, what is current in the world, and how we can currently do what is right in as far as to recognize and encourage people to help one another across disciplines, across cultures, across nations. So that's what we're looking to do today. So let me share with you, I'm going to get her rather brief, but still intricate bio up here. So my guest talker today is Dr. Bathsheba, and I will call her Sheva for the rest of this time. Guy, she is a change management consulting senior associate, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, and participatory action researcher. She is an alumnus of the Educational and Community-Based Action Research Doctoral Program at the University of Cincinnati. Sheva implements participatory and community-based methods to engage and support diverse groups and advocate for inclusive and equitable practices in higher education and healthcare institutions to drive change management. Her strengths include organizational development, community engagement, and innovative research practices. Now, again, I'm really excited because she's here to talk a little bit about higher education and healthcare and healthcare institutions, and mainly for those of us who are in those professions to try to find out ways that we can make biases, or have those of us who experience biases in these institutions, what we can do to create differences or lessen the differences amongst us in those institutions. And since I have been in education and I just had an issue with healthcare, I thought this was a great conversation to have because, you know, I might have to ask her about my personal experiences about that. But one of the reasons she said she wanted to be on the show is to talk about, like I said, anti-racism and her journey as an anti-racist, being a parent of a white parent. And she's also on the show, and she will tell you about her cultural relevance to the show now in this current time. I'd like her to share with you herself why she would love to be, why she loves to be on Race Talks today at this time and engage with you, our audience. So welcome, Sheva. Please introduce yourself to my audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Kimberly. I'm really excited to be on. My name is Dr. Sheva Guy. I think that you mentioned that we connected originally from my anti-racist versus not racist graphic that I created on LinkedIn. So if you go to my LinkedIn, I think we'll share that later. You can see that right at the top of my profile. And really, the reason why I created that was because I feel like, I mean, I write about anti-racism quite a bit. And that specific graphic was created because I noticed a lot of folks not understanding, number one, being able to distinguish anti-racist versus simply being not racist. And I put that in quotes, because underlying it is racist, when we are simply not racist, not being actively anti-racist. And another reason why I'm on the show, and we talked briefly about this just a little bit ago, is a lot of things that are going on in the world right now are very relevant to me. I am Jewish. I consider myself an atheist Jew, so I'm ethnically Jewish, Ashkenazi, but I don't really practice necessarily. I do some things. And I'm also Ukrainian Jew. So I've got a lot of perspective and a lot of feelings and emotions about what's going on in the world right now that I'm also happy to speak to.
Thank you for sharing that. And yes, one of the things that I had mentioned was that fact that we oftentimes think that because there's certain people in a nation or a group that has disparaging remarks or don't treat others nicely, that we tend to put that off on the entire group. So I wanted to make sure that we may have a brief conversation about how people do leave their land of luxury or their comfortability to go and to help others who may not look like themselves, who have the same background. And in the town that I am from now in Hudson, we actually had a member of our community run to the front lines when they initially started fighting in the Ukraine. And he was asked, why are you going there, you know, to help them and those people? And he's like, those are my brothers. Those are my sisters. Those are my family. You know, those people are family. So, and he's an African-American male. And that's what he decided to do. He came back. He's safe. And he does keep in connections. But that's one of the things that I would say when we find ourselves being torn. And, you know, do we do something that's comfortable or do we do something that can be of service to others? I don't judge, but I always say find a way to be supportive, whatever. I mean, maybe you can't fly to another foreign country or put yourselves in danger, but maybe you can give something financial. Maybe you can just meet someone that's from Ukraine and say some words of consolation. And there's in our town also in Hudson, we have Ukrainian churches. So just, you know, being supportive and with the community that is near you can often help those who are afar. So please share a little bit about what your beliefs of this and your engagement currently is with this war that's happening in both now Israel against the Hamas and in Ukraine against the Russian overreach, I'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm trying to think of where to start, but I think one of the things that I would like to touch on is I believe that you mentioned when your friend was African-American who went to Ukraine. And I believe you said before we talked that he did experience racism while he was there. Is that correct?
Yes. No. He didn't experience racism.
Oh, he did.
So on my show last month, we had a conversation whereas there was a group of people trying to exit the Ukraine. And they were some members were saying to people who were of color that they had to wait for real Ukrainians to, get on the buses first. So it's kind of like they segregated them and made them like second class citizenry in that respect.
Yeah. And so the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, when I talk about anti-racism and I talk about anti-Semitism, they are two distinctly different things. We do have to understand that, for example, within the Ukrainian community and within the Jewish community, there is racism, right? But also within other communities that aren't Jewish, there is anti-Semitism. And so we have to understand that these are wicked problems. They're very complex issues. And me being someone that is very passionate about, you know, ending anti-Semitism and ending racism and being actively against racism, it's something that I have to think about where there is that overlap, where someone who might be actively anti-racist may be anti-Semitic and vice versa. And we see that happening. The reason why I mention that is because, so again, my heritage is Ukrainian Jewish. And my grandpa is a Holocaust survivor. He's still alive. Oh, wow. He is a Holocaust survivor. And, you know, because of that, knowing that the death toll and the amount of anti-Semitism is at an ultimate high since the Holocaust is very emotionally draining for me and hurtful for me. But at the same time, I'm not in contact with that side of my family. And that is because I have Black children and they are racist against Black people. So you can be two things at once. So I can still have those feelings of, oh my God, he went through this horrible situation, and also say I'm currently estranged from that side of my family, even though I can still have that emotional connection. Because a lot of folks will ask me, you know, when I tell them that my grandpa's in the house, oh, can I talk to him? Blah, blah, blah. I personally don't talk to him because of that. And so even though I am actively anti-racist and speak a lot about anti-Semitism, sometimes those worlds, they do intersect very deeply. Another aspect of that is I do, and I won't get too much into it because I know we're talking about current events, but I see a lot of, you know, when I talk about anti-racism on my LinkedIn, I'll see white Jews come on and say, well, I don't count as white because I'm Jewish. And I'm like, but no, sir, like you're white. Like, yes, sit down. Yes. You are white 100%. We are not talking about that. This is 100% a whataboutism that I don't need to, this what about me thing that is totally separate. And we get in a really dangerous territory, especially when we talk about race as a social construct, calling anti-Semitism racism. It's not the same thing. But I do feel, you know, since everything in the past couple of weeks, everything happening in Israel, things, I think that my, I've seen a lot, I've just seen more anti-Semitism than I've ever seen in my life. And wow. And what's also interesting is at this point in my life, this is the most I've ever been connected to being Jewish. I used to not really say I was. I used to kind of hide it, even though my name's Batsheva. It's like, you can't repeat it.
Well, that's if you know anything about it.
It's pretty obvious. Exactly. Like, it's pretty obvious if you like know that it's Hebrew. But I spent a lot of my life hiding it. And now that I feel like, and I don't know if it's, now that I feel like I'm more connected to my Jewish roots, it's especially almost traumatizing for me to be engaging in this discourse on like, for like, I'm, my only social media is LinkedIn, but even there I'm seeing it. I'm seeing a lot of silence
really?
About Jewish hate, which is, yeah, I've seen a lot. It's gotten, it's picked up a little bit. But one thing that I say is you can be simultaneously two things at once. Like, my family are simultaneously Jewish and they are racist. I personally am not, I 100% condemn the actions of the Israeli government, but I also 100% condemn the actions of Hamas, but I am still a Jewish American.
Yes.
And you can be two things, but I've seen a lot of posts, anti-Israeli government, and really reading between the lines of the total silence of the support for Jews as opposed to Palestinians, which I have voiced my support for both communities. That's been really hard lately. And I've expressed that on LinkedIn. I've been talking a lot more about it because I think it needs to be said. Like, we need to feel, we don't feel safe right now as Jews in America at all. I have friends that are telling their kids, when you go to school, don't tell them you're Jewish. Make sure don't say anything about being Jewish. Don't tell them, because it's dangerous.
Yes, and they were actually saying that there are signs that you carry or wear, and I didn't know anything about that. Do you know of anything about that, where that if you share certain materials that are on you, that, I mean, I didn't think that was a thing.
I'm not sure what, can you explain that a little bit more? What you mean.
Actually, I'm not sure what I'm saying because I didn't understand the text that I had read. But I guess there may be their clothing, where people have certain things in their clothing to say I'm Jewish.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, yeah. So if you have, for example, like if you're somebody, like, for example, my brother-in-law wears his Star of David necklace every day.
Okay. Yes.
For example, or their high necklace or whatever. And those things we feel now that we have to hide them more so than we ever have. And that's, it's like hiding part of your identity, but then also me being able to acknowledge, you know, when we talk about the difference between anti-Semitism and racism, I can hide my Star of David. No one will know I'm Jewish.
Right.
Right. My sons walk into the room, they can't hide that they're Black. So understanding that there's those different levels of safety and those, and being able to still acknowledge my privilege as a white Jewish person and still say, I'm still kind of scared right now.
Although I definitely understand that. And I think, why would it be okay to tell your child to not make it known that you were Jewish, in a sense? I know it's for safety, but I don't know. It's like the idea of people passing, you know, people who are culturally or ethnically African-American, but their color, their skin tone, their hue is easily disguisable. So one would, I mean, I had an aunt that I thought I saw her walking down the street one day, and I was driving in the other direction. And I thought, oh, that's my aunt. When I get closer, I'm going to say hi. But when I got close to her, I saw that it was a white woman and it wasn't my aunt, because my aunt is just that light. And she just had that look. So I wouldn't want to say to a child that you know, pass or act white when, you know, it comes to the point where someone might treat you badly because if they think you're black. So how does that?
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that way. So for me, I haven't had that conversation with my children because we're not raising our children under any religion. They know that, like, I was raised Jewish and, you know, we do this, we do pagan stuff, or we do Christmas. My husband was raised Catholic. And so we kind of are like, and we are very values based. So my kids don't say that they don't identify as being Christian. They don't identify as being Jewish. So it's not a conversation that I've had with my kids, but I think part of it was, you know, last week Hamas came out saying this is a day of rage against all Jewish people. I believe it was last Friday.
Okay.
And it was one of those things where, you know, we didn't know it, like there were,
Cells,
like, synagogues places. Were armed, yes. Like Jewish schools were being like more carefully protected. And so it's, if we can keep like any amount that we can keep our kids safe, or I believe that that's a perspective of the folks that were sharing that, was probably where they were coming from. Like, how in this moment can I do my best to keep my child safe? That's such a good point. Like hearkening, like to, like comparing it to passing. I think that is such an excellent point, especially considering it's definitely easier for a white Jew to pass as a non-Jew, right?
But when you think about like the mental problems that can arise, because that's one of the elements that I write in my book, you know, to see racism as a disease,
yeah,
and how it manifests in one's mind over time. But we mentioned social construct. You said it several times. I'm going to go ahead and share the definition.
Oh, perfect.
A social construct refers to an idea, a concept, or a phenomenon that is created and maintained by society rather than being natural. And so that means it's not real. It's not truth. It's how we perceive things and according to a label that we put on. I like to say sometimes it's like words in itself, where we can say bad. Bad is a negative term, but we can use bad, the term bad, meaning good. You know, like Michael Jackson had a song called "I'm Bad, He's Bad." And it was like being really good or very or great or something to want to be like. But so social constructs just mean that, and they can be changed, right? So there are times when we look to see race, and in my book, I show that over time, there's like tens of thousands of races. I mean, every decade, people would, construe another race. So, you know, not just terminology, but adding to a cultural set. So specifically, if you go to different nations, you know, if you're colored in one nation, you terminology is colored in one nation, then in another nation it's not the same color, and it's certainly not the same culture, because you don't know one another, you don't speak the same language, you don't eat the same foods, you're not, your heritage doesn't derive from the same place. And so if this is always interchangeable, then it's not truth, then it's not real. So why do we succumb to it? Why do we put up with it to some extent? And it's not just race, of course. It can be gender identity. And I note that you put in, when you shared with me your bio, you put she, her, and hers to share how you identify. And I actually do that on my signature in my my email. And for me, it's a sign of allyship with those who are gender nonconformists. Or I don't even know if that's the right term, but that's the one I'll use, because we do have to talk about it. But totally write in and tell me, we don't use the word nonconformist, but to show support that I recognize, because like you said, it's to, you're somehow privileged, right? So we're privileged by feeling, you know, looking and feeling like a woman and being able to say hers, where there's not everyone has that advantage to actually wake up and look like the gender they feel they are. And of course, there is also hierarchies like wealth and class. I was just looking at a YouTube video that shared how middle class black people were some of them did not identify as Black because they identified Black with poverty. And so, like, I guess with your, you mentioned your grandfather, was that your grandfather who lived for, who lived through the Holocaust, but is a racist even so. So it's like a Black, when this, in, on the YouTube video, it was a Black man who recognized because he was wealthy and grew up in around other wealthy people, both Black and white Europeans, felt that they didn't understand the cultural the culture or the ethnic identity of a Black person in America. And of course, we have people coming from other nations like Africa, that where Garrett's friend was going to share his story about, where they don't even understand the term Black because in their nations, they're all that. So when everyone is all something, we don't need to have give it a term. And a friend of mine said, I don't understand that. So I said, okay, well, let's just say for him, I knew he loved television. So I said, do we call television color television anymore? And he says, no. I says, but there was a time when people referred to television as color television because there was something called Black and white television. There was a difference. So when there's a difference, you give it a label so you can communicate better. So that's why we tend to label things, but it's us labeling based on what is real and what is there at the time. But I wanted to just put that out. So when we talk about social constructs, we're talking about what is at the time a way of communicating, of having a social discourse. But that doesn't mean that it's real or valid. And certainly if it's negative, we can dismiss it in our lives. At least that's what I say in my book. And how to overcome racism, you have to overcome it for yourself, not really get in the heads of other people. So share with us more, Sheva. So we're good friends now. I saw that, I mean, one of the questions I had for you was you mentioned that you were a parent of Black children. Can you share the gender of those children or some how that came to be? I think that would be interesting for the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know who, I know like the listeners can't see, but I've got pictures of my kids over here. So it's actually a really funny, like, well, not funny, interesting story for how everything happened, because I went from 0 to 3 kids in 3 months. And it's even wilder because then the pandemic gets thrown
at what
in.
At what age were you?
I was 27, 28. I'm 31 now.
Wow. Okay.
So it was April 2019. We started taking foster care classes. We were planning on fostering children and potentially adopting. And this is something that we had always planned on doing, but we found out that we thought that it wasn't possible for me to get pregnant. We said, you know what, let's just do it now. We've always wanted to do it. We wanted to wait till we had biological children, but let's do it now. Why not? So we're taking foster care classes, and long story short, we got our first placement in August 2019, and these are my children now, Anthony and Jonathan, and they were 5 and 6 when they came to us, and I was also 7 months pregnant with my daughter.
That's why you said 3 children, okay? Because that's why I said 3.
That's why I said 3. So my other one, she's somewhere.
She's
here.
Not important. So, not to this conversation.
She's covered up by the witch hat. She's a witch like me, so she's over here. So I had my daughter. She was due January 2020. She was 4 weeks early. I had her the day after Christmas 2019. The day I had to go back from maternity leave was March 13th, 2020. We all know what happened then. So not only did we go from 0 to 3 children, it was all in one house all the time, virtual school, newborn baby, pumping, breastfeeding, crying, everything. Like, it was absolutely wild, but it happened and, you know, it was a whirlwind, but it happened in the best way possible, looking back, as stressful as it was.
You bonded.
And we bonded very, very quickly. We, you know, went through a lot of stress of not knowing, you know, would the boys be staying with us? Originally, we, you know, there was a plan towards reunification that didn't work out. We said, these kids aren't going anywhere. So now My boys are 9 and 10. My daughter will be 4 the day after Christmas this year. And one thing that I've been really intentional about, or we have, my husband and I have been very intentional about, is, and this is something that we've always done and always planned to do with our children, but now we do have children that are of two different races. Our sons are Black and our daughter is white. And making sure that, yes, ethnicities, I'm sorry. And so different ethnicities, social construct, and they, and we're being very intentional about how we speak to our children about race. So after you talk, you mentioned your book, I immediately added it to my Amazon cart and I'll check out after, because I thought, I was like, what? I haven't read this one yet. But we're very, you know, I've written a lot about raising anti-racist children as a white parent, and that is for my Black sons and for my white daughter as well, and making sure we're continuously having those conversations and not saying things like, you know, when I talk about anti-racist versus not racist, we're not saying things like, it doesn't matter if you're white or Black, we're all the same, you know, it's not, it does, our differences matter. We have to be talking about those differences. Our differences are special and they should be celebrated, but we also have to understand that those differences have social implications, where I have to have the talk with my boys. I talk about that a lot. You know, we've got the cop talk, we got the sex talk, and both of those, the cop talk has a higher merit at this point than the sex talk, especially when they were 5 and 6, right? Like, those are the things we were talking about. And my kids are also,
they were 5 and 6, and yeah. You're talking about the cop talk?
So my son is very, very tall.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So that was always, so that was always a very, very hard situation to navigate, because I've got a little one. My 5-year-old was a little one. But my son now, he is very, very tall. And even when he was 6, people would compare him, be like, oh, he looks like a 13-year-old. Right. I'm like, he's 6. And so we would get those comments a lot. And so that's why I was like, man, I was not prepared to have this conversation, but we have to have this conversation, especially since he was with us for several months. And then George Floyd happened, and we couldn't avoid it because he was getting those comments already. And that was so scary for us. And so these are the things that I'm trying to make sure that I'm peppering into the conversation in a natural way that is age appropriate. And so there are lots of different ways that I do that.
Well, when you say they were getting already talked to because of George Floyd, what would be something that would be said to a child?
So that's there's a lot of personal family stuff that goes in.
Okay. Well, you don't have to go into that. I was just thinking on the playground. No. What would other kids be saying?
No, okay. And it was like lockdown and all that as well. So it wasn't that. It was more so comments from family that were on the other end of the spectrum than us. They're folks that we don't really communicate with right now, but like my husband has a lot of cops on his side of the family, and things were getting heated, and they would say things in front of my kids that I did not think should be said in front of my kids. I remember what someone in our social worker, and this has always stuck with me, even if you're not saying something directly to kids, they hear it. She always said little donkeys have long ears. She was like, remember that, they will hear it. That's what she said.
And they feel it, even if they don't understand the language, they'll feel it.
Exactly.
They'll know when you're talking about them or when you're talking negatively about something.
Exactly. And so there were things that, you know, were said about their biological parents, et cetera, that we would have to. Yep. And so there were so many different things we had to navigate with, as well as like the foster care system and the aspect of adoption. And then you throw the pandemic in, and just everything was happening all at once. And so we didn't have a choice but to have some hard conversations, again, in an age appropriate way. We always make sure that we're tailoring those conversations as much as we can for all of our kids, depending on how things come up. And we talk about them in a way that, when it comes up naturally, is the biggest thing for us, is when they ask questions and are inquisitive about it. So that has definitely, like, thinking about anti-racist versus not racist has been a huge driver in our parenting style, for sure.
So it's very personal for you, which I didn't know, actually. I guess I never think, why would this particular person be very knowledgeable about a topic or an idea that they don't have to succumb to, in a sense. And I talk to a lot of people and I say there are certain people who they can share, they can give me knowledge about something that, you know, I'm supposed to be more knowledgeable about. But because you live it doesn't mean you are knowledgeable about it in a way that you can educate others. And so, you know, even with during the period of enslavery in America, the people who helped didn't necessarily look like you. And so abolitionists were largely of white and certain religious backgrounds. And so, but that didn't mean, like you said, that didn't mean they weren't segregationists because they felt that slaves should be free, that no human should be owned because of their religious convictions. But they still had the social beliefs that they just weren't as good as they were. So the segregation was very strong. There were some abolitionists that wanted to see people move to another nation, you know, go back to Africa campaign, but they would help with the railroad, the Underground Railroad. So, and you just never knew where you were. And they change, you know, and as people grow, they change their values systems too. So if they're around people who know best on how to educate them or how just to respond to them, over time, you know, some of the biggest, national, segregation is from the 50s and the 60s had in during the 80s prior to their deaths totally changed and, you know, said that they were wrong. So there is, I'm hoping for you and your family that some of those members may come around. Like my family, I just had a family reunion and my family would say a come to Jesus moment where they are, you know, see the error of their ways in a sense. So this is personal for you. What about how you can help people professionally in what you do with your, and I wanted you to explain some of what you did, your change management. Like what are these terms and what do they do?
Yeah, so I'll kind of put it in a nutshell. So I do change management, and I do so in a way that's participatory. And so really the simplest way to describe it is when a change is happening, which could be a new diversity and inclusion plan. It could be a new technology. It could be a new learning and development plan, whatever. I am the person that is the one that's saying we need to make sure that everyone is involved. And how do we make sure everyone is involved in an intentional way? So not only are they at the table, but they're, and I put that in quotes for those of you listening, that not only at the table, but also are able, their voices are taken seriously at the table. Their voices are actually valued and not just, you know, gathering feedback and not utilizing it. So it's really about any organizational change or any change really, which includes diversity and inclusion work. And I do that in a way that involves as many stakeholders as possible and in an inclusive way. So that's kind of in a nutshell what I do. I could talk about that for another hour, but...
Well, give me an example of something that could be an aha moment for us in what you do that maybe you experienced.
An aha moment. Okay. This is going to be hard. Okay.
Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to have you think really well about that because this would be a great time to go to our next segment. Did you want to say something right now? Okay. So hold on that. And we're going to go to... Okay. Remember, because I won't remember the question. So
got it. I'll remember.
What you're thinking, cap on, because I did want to introduce like I said, we had another guest here, and I'm going to try to talk into the mic while I shouldn't even have to look at this, right? Because I know you for so many, for so long, but I want to do you justice. So we have here to share what he is up to. Our very, I want to call you a number one fan of the show, maybe. So we have Garrett Roche, who is a podcaster, and his podcast is, I want to say positivity at its purest, but that's not it.
It is, Kimberly. The Roach SolidTruth.com. Play on my surname or last name. R O C H E.
Positive.
Solid.
Yes. Where does that come in?
You go to the website, TheRoachSolidTruth.com, and then you'll see it pop up because my theme on my podcast is positivity. So it will say on the main page, the landing page, as they say, positivity as it, at its purest.
Positivity at its purest. I love that. And I love the you know, Roche. Roche is actually rock in French. Did you
know that? That's
correct. La Roche. It's a feminine word. So that's even more interesting when we talk about social construction.
Certainly.
There are languages that actually have gender for items, like a table is la table, so it's feminine and stuff like that. So
my particular roaches are from Ireland, but they, you know, way back they say because of the Norman invasion.
The Norman French. Yeah, the Norman French. Okay, so share with our listeners what you're up to with positive the Roche Solid Truth.
Well, I must start by saying a thing of beauty is a joy forever. And thank you so much, Kimberly. I'm here with the most classiest, chic hostess one could have and in the studio. And it's just beyond invigorating. And as many listeners are aware, I'm no stranger to WGXC. I've been a guest and co-host on other shows. And I did host the Monday morning show, which went on pause for obvious reasons in March 2020. And hopefully with the way the station's changed up now, eventually perhaps I'll have that back or have it on another day, or I'm extremely open. But anyway, my website, which is separate, completely separate from WGXC, although personally I like to consider it an offshoot of, you know, my radio show that was and perhaps could be again, TheRoachSolidTruth.com. And listeners can access my podcast by clicking on podcast when they come on the landing page on TheRoachSolidTruth.com. And then they'll want to sign into what's called Soundwise, because that's where the actual audio podcasts are saved. But there's other attractions on my website as well besides the podcast. But that's primarily what the website is for. And
your guests you were having were coming from all different nations. Right?
That's correct.
So
locally, nationally, internationally, I have had everyone as far as just narrowing down the podcasts. There's about four on there now because it's a relatively new work in progress, but there are going to be more and more as we go along. There's been everyone from a pen pal of mine out in Minnesota to a wonderful recording of some speakers from a recent anniversary of a sailboat or a sloop that was built in the area that's 120 years old just a few months ago called the Eleanor. There were a couple of speakers on there. Some local listeners may recognize the names Louise Bliss and Chris Hoppy, who are major primary contributing factors in that project.
Well,
and
I wanted you to share the information that has to do with the topic of race, because you also meet and chat with people from countries like Africa. And we had a conversation last month about some Americans who went to Africa. And so you had met a guest. One of your upcoming guests was Eshton, is that his name?
That's correct. Eshton Mutakwa.
So we only have about a minute left.
That's right.
Left.
How can I forget? You were my first podcast guest, Kimberly.
Yes.
Yes, on TheRoachSolidTruth.com. But I will have, at one point or another, my dear friend and pen pal of well over 10 years now, named Eshton Mutakwa. He's from Harare in Zimbabwe. And he will hopefully also be brought as a guest to Kimberly's show here, Race Talks, at some point in time or another. But it's most interesting to hear his insight into like what's happening in his country. And he talks much about the interior corruption that's going on, and it's causing some of the citizens to go against each other as well. He has experienced, and his family have experienced, struggles due to this, not as harshly as some others, but, you know, he's definitely, you know, not at the top of the ranks.
Well, like, how did you become
the few are there who are running? Like, Mnangagwa is the president of Zimbabwe, but he's really a dictator, so to speak, as they call him.
And we are looking at a world right now where conservatives, I guess they're called conservatives and they're nationalists in their countries, like with Poland, just changing, hopefully changing of the guard. So trying to become more democratic. And so these nations in Africa that really were put together by the Westerners didn't really take it into account, the people that were actually living there way before they were conquered and not to say in so many words, that they were then pushed together and made to live together without having the same cultural traditions or norms and values, which of course are all social constructs that can be changed, but it takes generations of time if it's going to be done so without a lot of animosity and fighting going on. But I have to go back to the show that we started, and I did want to let people know that your guest, your future guest, Eshton, was from Zimbabwe, and we haven't even talked about that nation, and there's so many more. So I'm so happy that you were able to come on and share that. And maybe next time you can get to how do you become, because that's the right act, right? Talking and communicating with people of different cultures and different nations and people who certainly don't look even like you. So that's one of the reasons why I really want you on, to be able to share how people can do that. So how can you be a pen pal from someone in a different nation like that?
Oh, absolutely. One is more than welcome to contact me. If you go on theroachsolidtruth.com, that's THEROCHE, solidtruth.com, and my contacts are on there. Please, my goal is to make history in bringing people together of a positive nature and who desire positivity as much as possible, because there's a general lack in this, and I've seen this happening for decades and decades. It's going on in every country. In fact, there is quite a concentration of it in the United States.
Okay,
and
thank
there's
you,
Garrett. Much to go in.
Thank you. I have to get back to the question that I asked.
Certainly, can.
Sheva.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Sheva. We gave you a lot of time, Sheva. So make
I've
it
got
good.
It. I've got right, it. And right. I came up with it quick because it's something I say all the time and I should have just been right with it.
Okay.
But I always say that the Venn diagram of change management and equity and inclusion is a circle. I always say that.
Say that one more time. The Venn diagram of
change management, mm-hmm, and equity and inclusion efforts is a circle. Also seen a quote that diversity and inclusion efforts are change management efforts. And the reason why I say that is because you can't sustain change unless you're being equitable and inclusive in your practices, and you cannot implement diversity and inclusion efforts at a higher education institution, healthcare institution, organization, whatever, if you aren't taking into consideration ways to manage that change to also make it sustainable. So that's my aha moment, is that they are one and the same. And I've got lots of sources I can share that are also on my LinkedIn. But
well, share the management idea. You said, yeah.
Change management. Yeah. So when we're talking about change management, it's about, you know, we can't just introduce a new program, a new technology, a new change overnight without taking people into consideration. So I say that I'm like the people person of the change. So I'm the one that helps with getting people ready, like the change is happening. Let's get some buy-in. The change is happening. What feedback do I have? The change is happening. How do we bring people along with us for the change, as opposed to just saying, this change is happening, we're saying it's happening, it's happening tomorrow, we're doing it.
That's the aha. I think people think that, even people who are part of a community or part of a group, a committee, that want to see change, they don't know how to manage the change. Mm-hmm. And so the change doesn't actually happen as they feel. And these are people who are instigating it. These are people who are making it, you know, happen, because like you said, they lack the buy-in. You have to bring those people who are part of the change in, you know, get them involved in the change from the beginning. It's kind of like the top down, bottom up kind of thing. Is that what?
Absolutely. In other words.
Okay. Wonderful. So I think that's beautiful. We have it's not higher education, but we have in Hudson right now a huge change. We have leadership in our community that is predominantly, we've added several leadership positions, African-American women. And that's a huge change for our area. And it's like no one wants to say that because there is this, we wanted this change, but how do we support this change now? Because we do have majority minority students, and now we have leadership to reflect the student body. But how do we make sure that we have buy-in from all those others that may, even those that wanted to, but all those others that didn't think it was necessary even? So we might hire you.
Please.
Wonderful. We have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure we are going out with a bang. You mentioned people can go to your LinkedIn site. Please share that site with everyone. Your name, I think, is part of that site, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's LinkedIn.com. It's like /in/Batsheva-guy. You can also just look up Sheva Guy, and you should be able to find me. Yeah, I should probably. Yeah, that's it. Oh, and you can also look up my hashtag the real Dr. Bat Guy, and you can also find my post that way and link to my profile that way as well.
But why can't we be friends? I can only follow you.
We're friends.
Okay, well, we need to make that happen. So we have done that for you, and you're going to buy the book. And in order to do that,
I am. It's in my cart right now.
You can go to Amazon, but you can also look to see www.KimberlyIrwin.me. That's actually instead of .com, it's .me. If you missed Sheva's information, it will be on my website also. Now, to follow out with some interesting sounds from El Dia de Muertos, or the Mexican Day of the Dead Festival, which shares similarities with our Halloween, including some similar practices like decorating with pictures of skeletons to ghoulishly shaped sweets like the famous Pan de Muertos, which is bread of the dead, or the sugar calaveras skulls. And this is really interesting. In Mexico, they don't like sweet candy. They like salty and hot candy. So it's a lot of differences, but I'm sure it's delicious. So here's some music from the Dia de los Muertos. It looks like it's trying to come on. It's populating. I see pictures. Uh,